This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can listen to our radio show on Pacifica stations nationwide and watch our TV program on Free Speech TV and on our website. Donald Trump has sparked a strong resistance to his racist policies, such as the Muslim ban, the crackdown on sanctuary cities, and the border wall. But his economic policies seem to have sown confusion. He has stacked his cabinet with Goldman Sachs and ExxonMobil executives, but he has also cancelled the Trans-Pacific Partnership, an agreement hugely unpopular with unions and championed by the Democratic Party. He's also given lip service to ending the outsourcing of jobs. American workers are so desperate to improve their financial prospects that those who voted for Trump may be willing to sell the rest of us out in exchange for promises of good jobs. Progressives, then, ignore the ills of pro-corporate neoliberal capitalism at our peril. My guest, Les Leopold, just wrote an article entitled If Progressives Want to Defeat Trump, They Must Win Back Workers. Les is the director of the Labor Institute in New York. He's the author of Runaway Inequality, An Activist Guide to Economic Justice. His earlier books include The Looting of America, How Wall Street's Game of Fantasy Finance Destroyed Our Jobs, Pensions, and Prosperity, and What We Can Do About It. Welcome to the program, Les Leopold.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I've been thinking about this issue as well for the past week and a half, that on the one hand, if you know we are all sort of in this together, that Trump is attacking us all. On the other hand, how is it that he can put forward some policies that are threats to pro-corporate capitalism, and no one says anything, and that he's actually on the other side of the Democrats on this. So how much of the sort of worker anger do you feel was the reason why Trump was elected? Not just maybe racism or white supremacy or white racial resentment, but actual sort of economic suffering.
Well, I think this election, we saw a revolt against neoliberal economic regime. There was a revolt from the left via Sanders, and then from the right via Trump. And Hillary Clinton was viewed as the epitome of that neoliberal establishment. And what I mean by neoliberalism is the free trade regime, mobility of capital, tax cuts, deregulation, and the expansion of Wall Street's power. And this is something that's been going on for 40 years. And Trump is the first Republican to actually attack a presidential candidate, to attack free trade, and to question, not question, but actually try to interfere with the mobility of capital. This is unheard of. If you think about it for a second, when was the last time a national Democratic leader spoke out against a plant closing of any kind, ever? I can't think of one. I remember no political presidential candidate has, they may have criticized the trade agreement, but they never said, you shouldn't move. You shouldn't move your plant, the carrier plant from Indianapolis to Mexico. That's not right. And what this does for us, for progressives, is it opens up the entire question about the mobility of capital. What's missing is a progressive movement, position, policy, organizing drive to fan the flames of this issue and push Trump in a corner. For example, one of the things I've been advocating as loudly as I possibly can is right now the trade union movement should be going to every facility that's in threat, either outsourcing has been, offshoring has been announced or is being threatened. And they should go there, union or non-union, doesn't matter. They should go there and they should say, we're going to take your case to Trump. We're going to ask him, what about us? What about you? Why aren't you protecting these jobs? Because there are tens of thousands of them, not just blue collar, white collar as well, that are, matter of fact, Goldman Sachs is moving lots of white collar jobs to India. This is happening all over the country, and it's viewed as natural, an act of God. That's just the way it is. Trump's saying, no, it's not going to be that way. The progressives in the labor movement and elsewhere should be mobilizing these people and say, we'll take your case to Trump. You don't have to sit back and just let this happen to you. And that would be the make, you know, plant closing issues used to be a progressive cause. In the late 70s.
And it feels like the Democrats very successfully equated human rights and progressive values on race, gender, et cetera, with free trade and pro-corporate capitalism. And part of that whole movement has been, you know, Facebook and tech companies like Google also aligning themselves with these so-called liberal values. They are liberal values, but is it that equation of a free movement of capitalism with human rights for all, putting those all part, you know, of one a big menu of liberal issues that has been a huge problem for progressives?
Well, if we only work on the so-called liberal issues and we ignore the economic issues, I think we're going to lose. I think people are, this isn't just about improving your economic condition. We're talking about losing your job. You know, having a $15 or $20 or $25 an hour job and then having to take a $7 an hour job at Walmart or an $8 an hour job to support your family. This is a catastrophic event when it happens to you. And it's been happening all over the country. Now, supposedly, there were supposed to be good jobs to replace the good new high-tech jobs to replace the good manufacturing jobs that left. But that turns out to be a fiction. In the United States. In Germany, by the way, manufacturing jobs have held basically steady, and they have the same technology, the same automation, but they don't. They try to build their manufacturing sector. Here, we basically said, do what you want. And of course, what corporations are going to do is go find the cheap labor, the cheapest labor they can find, and move their plant in that direction, especially if they don't have to pay any tariffs to bring the product back. So I don't think we have to abandon liberal values, but we need a thread. We need to bind together these various issues instead of viewing them all separately. Just resisting Trump is not going to be enough if he's going to attack the mobility of capital. We have to weave a thread between the immigration issues and the civil rights issues and the all the other healthcare issues into also the job issue, the mobility of capital issues. Plant closings have always been a progressive issue, and we cannot abandon that to Trump. We do that, we're basically going to hand them.
Isn't it true that it's not just white workers who suffer from economic problems? It's not just white workers who are losing their jobs. I mean, in fact, people of color tend to pay a higher price for economic problems and during depressions. People of color are usually the first to be impacted. We know undocumented immigrants are among the most vulnerable of workers. They get paid the least. They have the least job security. So in fact, progressives, you're right, can really thread together those issues very effectively. Of course, Democrats have stood in the way of that, haven't they? I mean, this is a huge problem. You're right. We don't hear, even the most stalwart progressive Democrats often just don't speak enough about these issues.
They're on the side of capital. They're on the side of Wall Street. Wall Street wants these plants to move. You make an excellent point about when we think of manufacturing or jobs moving offshore. You know, the work, if we think white working class, we're thinking 50 years ago or 100 years ago. I mean, this is a very integrated workforce. The carrier workers that Trump intervened and saved 800 of the 1,100 jobs or whatever the number turns out to be, 50% of those workers are people of color. 50% of those workers on the assembly lines are women. And 10% are recent Burmese immigrants. That's the new workforce of America. And they're the ones that are being crushed by this offshoring. So you're absolutely right. There's no reason to ignore these issues, but it takes courage. It takes the ability to take on Wall Street and take on the corporate elites and say, no, you cannot just pick up your factory and move someplace else to take advantage of cheap labor. You have an obligation to produce products and jobs here. And the joke of it all is the money saved by moving the plant to Mexico by carrier, for example, $68 million a year. It has nothing to do whatsoever either with technology or with competition. They're doing it only because the parent corporation, United Technologies, just announced a $10 billion stock buyback to raise the price of the stock and enrich the hedge fund, 56 hedge funds that are key investors and the top executives. And to finance that stock buyback, that $10 billion stock buyback, they want the $68 million a year. So it's a complete, we call it financial strip mining. They're literally taking the wealth out of the workers, out of the community, and they're putting it in the hands of Wall Street elites and top CEOs. That's a story the Democrats, except for Bernie Sanders and a few others, are afraid to say.
Right.
They will drive their support from Wall Street.
So I remember, of course, in the late 90s, the early 2000s, we had the massive, so-called anti-globalization movement, maybe poorly named, or some people call it the global justice movement. And that was a time when unions came together with progressive activists, environmentalists, and had a very clear and powerful statement against global neoliberal capitalism. Then, of course, 9/11 happened. That whole movement got completely derailed. And not till Occupy Wall Street did we see progressives take up this issue again. Occupy Wall Street got also sort of faded away into nothingness. Now, we saw how the March for Women drew so many Americans, on millions of Americans out on the streets. There are marches being planned. I know there's a workers' march being planned, even a general strike. But what about a march that clearly laid out that people weren't just for raising the minimum wage, but against neoliberal capitalism, that we need a different way forward. Do you feel that that's missing in, I know it's only been a week and a half, but is that really missing in our movement that's building out of this Trump presidency?
Yeah, what I actually think is missing is a kind of national steering committee that would have labor and all these various groups that are involved in the Trump resistance sitting down and planning. It's not just that we need more demonstrations. We need a systematic organizational front to this so that we can plan both demonstrations, legislative actions, legal actions, and so on, and have a coherent agenda of what we're for. We can't just be against Trump, because if you're against Trump, you're supporting the old kind of Clinton establishment. We have to go forward. This reminds me a little bit of the 60s, you know, I'm of that generation, with when national mobilizations were formed, whole bunches of groups came together, you know, churches, some of the progressive labor, whatever, came together to try to plan, you know, a strategy moving forward. And I think we need that. We can't just do these things with spontaneous combustion. Look, we had the Arab Spring, and, you know, without organization, it becomes the Muslim Brotherhood, because they were organized. We had Occupy Wall Street. And there were 900 encampments across the country, and in 6 months they were gone because they didn't have an organizational structure. We had the Sanders campaign.
And sadly, Les, I remember talking to activists with Occupy Wall Street, and they took pride in not having, I mean, I don't want to bash the movement. I felt like I was part of the movement. Many of my friends were part of it. But at the same time, you know, some folks that I talked to were proud of the fact that there was no demand, there was no clear articulation of what they were against, and specifically, I mean, there was an articulation of what they were against, but not what they were for. And that even saying that out loud to some folks in that movement was anathema, and I think to their detriment.
Well, look, hopefully people learn from experience. Otherwise, you know, it's hopeless. But I think people do learn from experience. When you're that, when you have no organization, you disappear in 6 months. That's a fact. We can, you know, it went from being a worldwide phenomenon to gone.
Yeah.
No organization. The Sanders campaign has that problem in a slightly different way. It was incredibly well organized as it got going. It raised more money than Hillary Clinton, which was amazing. But now where is it? Because there's no national organizational structure afterwards. I don't know if our revolution is gonna become that. I hope it does, but it's not there yet. There are people all over the country that want to join something. I do these presentations I get in front of a lot of labor groups across the country, and also these articles that I'm writing. People write into me saying, "Where do I join? How do I join? How do I become part of this national organization?" But the organization is not there. The people that gave money to the Sanders campaign, they would give $25 a year to be part of a national organization. We could build a real powerful movement, but it needs structure, and people need to come out of their issue silos and recognize that we're all connected. The power of Wall Street, the corruption of money in politics, runaway inequality forms a common denominator that links us all together. And once we start seeing ourselves as movement builders, not just issues, but movement builders, then we'll reach out to all the people that are affected, which includes the working people that are being crushed and the Fight for 15 and you know, all the broad issues that dig deeply into the working class. And if we were carefully, I mean, we have to ask ourselves the question, how did Trump get elected? How did that happen? And I you know, there are lots of reasons, from Putin to, you know, to the FBI, and all, we can make a lot of excuses. But one of the reasons I think he got elected is that we were disorganized. We did not build a national movement. We weren't ready for that kind of right-wing populism because we didn't create our own version of progressive populism.
Right.
We're disorganized.
I want you to try to explain, you know, in case there are Trump voters who are listening, who are convinced that they only voted for Trump because he promised them jobs, and somehow they believe that the other horrible things he's going to do to people of color and women are not going to pan out. He, as I mentioned, has canceled the TPP, has talked about not outsourcing jobs, he's taken a few actions on carrier that did come under criticism, but he did save a few hundred jobs. Then he's done the opposite. He's done basically what the Democrats would do in terms of stacking his cabinet with Wall Street CEOs. How do you explain that to Trump voters? That's a very serious and obvious contradiction, which is become actually apparent to some Trump voters who are angry seeing Goldman Sachs and ExxonMobil have a seat at the table.
The answer to Trump is, what's our alternative? I think most people...
I'm wondering how you explain this to Trump voters.
I speak to them. You know, I go to in front of these large labor groups, half of them are voted for Trump. Hmm. It's not hard. It's not hard at all to make the case for how Wall Street's taking. Look, they're rejecting neoliberalism. So if I explain how neoliberalism is screwing them, they get it. If I explain why we need a common broad movement to take on Wall Street, they get it. That's not a problem. The problem is, where's that movement? It's not the Democratic Party. So we have to, that movement doesn't exist right now. Therefore, what's our alternative to Trump? We have 4 years to get together a real live alternative to Trump that's positive and that looks ahead towards a common agenda, much like the social democratic agenda that Bernie Sanders put together. We have to build that movement. Otherwise, people will say, well, you know, what's my choice? Are you going to give me another Democratic establishment person, I might stay with Trump? So, because at least he's disrupting things. I can't tell you how many times I heard that. Catch this. About half the steel workers voted for Trump. And most of those people that voted for Trump were Bernie people. But they hated Hillary Clinton because of her trade stuff. And so we better have an alternative for those people. They would overwhelmingly vote for a Sanders-type agenda. But how do we put that together? Who's going to represent that? What's it look like politically 4 years from now? We better get organized.
Right. And again, to me, it's such an important issue along racial justice and gender justice lines to work for economic justice, primarily because people of color and women are impacted more so than white males, who we see as being the main supporters of Trump. I mean, economic justice, in fact, will help people of color and women, you know, first and foremost, because the impact does the most. Well, Les, thank you so much for joining us. I want to make sure that we give out a website for your book, Runaway Inequality, or any other websites you'd like to give out?
Sure, runawayinequality.org. Also, you can buy the book via the website, or you can get it ordered from your bookstore. You get it from Amazon or Apple or Barnes & Noble online. There's electronic copies as well.
We'll post a link to that, as well as your article that we've been discussing on our website. Les, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Les Leopold is director of the Labor Institute in New York and author of Runaway Inequality, an activist guide to economic justice. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/RU with Sonali.